You're listening to the Pure Motive Radio Network. You can reach us at PureMotiveInc.com. That's PureMotiveInc.com. And find us on Facebook. Simply look for Pure Motive Radio and like us because we like you. Now get ready and fasten your seatbelts because you're going to go on the ride of your life with Marty McGibbon's Kick-Ass Personal Transformation. Kick-Ass Personal Transformation is a high-octane recovery talk show that provides you with tools you can use to maintain life balance, a sense of humor, motivation techniques, and messages of inspiration while creating and enjoying a new lifestyle in recovery. Guests on Marty's show are nationally headlining comedians with national TV credits, addiction treatment industry professionals, best-selling authors who write about addiction and recovery, thought leaders, along with health and wellness experts. The show is fast-paced, fun, and informative, and the show provides entertainment, education, and a discussion forum for people in recovery from addiction, or anyone who is involved with someone in recovery, or anyone interested in self-empowerment and personal development. During the show, call in and speak live with Marty. Dial toll-free 855-235-3451. Again, that number is 855-235-3451. If you're listening through your computer, smartphone, or tablet, you can chat live with Marty during the show. Simply scroll to the bottom of your browser and launch the chat room. And now your journey is about to begin on the Kick-Ass Personal Transformation Show. Ladies and gentlemen, here is your host, Marty McGibbon.
Yeah, hey, I'm Marty, and I am so stoked. First of all, I want to tell y'all that we're going to shorten that intro. Welcome to Kick-Ass Personal Transformation. My guest tonight is amazing. I love this guy, Paul J. Fett. He's a nationally headlining stand-up comic, a regular at the world-famous Comedy Store on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, a featured comic at the Riviera Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. Paul can be seen weekly at the Hip Story Salon in Studio City, California, a very cool room. His one-man show, Secrets of a Beverly Hills Shampoo Boy, ran for a year in Los Angeles, and honey, that is tough to get longevity like that, and it was a wonderful show, and it's now in development as an independent feature film. Also, Paul Jacek received his theater training at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, and he did a stint as a writer for Joan Rivers on TV Land's hit show, How Did You Get So Rich? Anyway, that's a he's got more things too. I saw his show Tray Tables Up, My Walk in the Clouds, which was a 9-week run in North Hollywood. He's done a lot of other work in theater, and he's just freaking amazing. My brother, my friend, and my colleague. He is a radio personality. He's got a hit show on LA Talk Radio, The Oh Mary Show, that he co-hosts with Mary Kennedy, and they have mucho listeners. Welcome, Paul.
Hello, Marty.
I forgot to add that you've been profiled in The New Yorker. Oh, honey, you're just so hot. I don't even have time to tell everything. You're just so freaking hot.
Thank you so much. I am so excited about being on your show. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's great to have you here. So you were telling me when we talked about you coming on, and I asked you what kind of topic you wanted, and you said, let's do HIV, humor is vital. And that topic rings a bell. I mean, that just really rocks. You've got anything you want to talk about right offhand, or you want me to just ask you some questions about your fantastic you. What do you think? I mean, it's all about you, honey.
You know, let's just roll with it. You know, what I what And I've learned a lot from you. One of the great things about knowing you, Marty, is, first of all, I met you as a stand-up comic, and she is a gifted, amazing. Your bit about going to get your feet done and the Asian nail technician still splits me in half. And then to find out that we shared this, you know, amazing journey of recovery. You know, I think that's what fascinates me about people that do stand-up comics or stand-up comedy. You really have to have some sort of history. You really have to be sort of begged to do what we do. And certainly in our case, you know, the history that you carry, the fact that you're still living, my darling, is a miracle unto itself. But that you've turned it around and have and your book, for those of you that don't know, if you haven't read Never Give In to Fear, it's probably one of my favorite books that I've read in the past 5 years. Now, and I know, Marty, we're dear friends. I mean, the woman loaned me money. That's how close we are. So, but the deal is, you know, I've known her long enough. I'm reading this book, and it is so well written and so compelling. I was nervous. Now, I know that she's okay, but I'm reading this book like, oh, my God, I hope she gets out of this one. It is a cliffhanger, bar none, but also an amazing testimony to the miracle that is recovery. So I'm just thrilled to be here, and we can talk about whatever you want to, Marty.
Well, let's talk about, I want to talk about the fabulous Paul Jacek, and humor is vital, and how we I want you to share some insight into how you keep your humor going and how you create laughter in facing daily challenges. Because I think sometimes it's the daily life that really gets us down. Like there have been big disasters in our past, but I think the things that really get to us are those little mundane and sometimes not so mundane things that happen in daily life. And using humor as a way to just stay on top of it, you know, how it's like the rule of 62, you know what I mean? Like, don't take yourself too seriously.
Right.
But I also wanted to talk about your career, but, you know, I wanted to ask you, about your career in stand-up and some other things. So what would you like to start out with? I mean, how would you say that?
I remember the first time I heard somebody talking about, you know, especially here in town, when the AIDS crisis began,
mm-hmm.
you know, and by that time I was pretty well into recovery
mm-hmm.
because I have been clean and sober now. This is my 32nd holiday season.
Oh, my goodness, honey. Congratulations.
And I don't say that to impress anybody but me, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't believe I made it.
You know, I didn't plan on living this long or looking this good, but it is amazing to me because when it started, I thought alcoholism was difficult. But when we were faced with all of a sudden here in Los Angeles and certainly the world, an incurable disease that was like an invisible sniper.
Oh, that's horrible. Just like a life-threatening plague. It was just absolutely swept the world. It was terrifying.
And we couldn't get any help. And I remember my dear friend Terry Sue, who is this amazing, he has 6 more days of sobriety than I do.
Uh-huh.
And he, you know, you hear occasionally, especially when you're new, that you will eventually hear your story. And I remember sitting listening to speakers, and I really hadn't connected anyone. And all of a sudden, this creature came in the room in capri pants, wedgie sandals. He had his toes done and wearing bracelets from his elbow to his wrist and about 72,000, 32,000 necklaces. And he began to talk about his recovery.
Uh-huh.
We even went to the same college. I thought, that's who's carrying my story, was Terry Sue. Now, I'll tell you what, Terry Sue, as I said, still to this day has 6 more days of sobriety. And he used to wear a button that said, God is more powerful than AIDS. And I remember having coffee with him after a meeting. And I looked at him, I said, Terry Sue, is it true? And he said, girl, we're going to do what we learned here. We're going to be of service to people. And we're not going to live in fear.
Oh, honey, I love that.
And we have have walked through this together. We would go out to Los Angeles County Hospital, you know, and the ward at that time was as large as an airplane hangar and in these very sad-looking, chipped-painted bedsteads. And it was, I felt like Scarlet among the dead of Atlanta.
Yeah.
And I just thought, how do we do, and how do we, you know, stay sober through this? Well, you find a sense of humor.
Yeah,
I remember somebody saying, I walked up to their bedside, and I was crying. And he said, what the hell's your problem? And I said, Bill, this is awful. He said, it's me, not you.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at him. He goes, I don't have enough energy to take care of you and me at the same time. So if you can't walk in here and bring some joy and happiness, don't visit me. And I'm like, wow.
Oh, that's so good.
So I used to come and bring balloons and tie them to the edge of people's beds, or I'd order a pizza to, you know, the room and the bed.
Yeah.
And so humor is vital, no matter what you're facing. Now, I know you as a stand-up comic, when tragedy hits, comedians go to comedy first.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, because there's so much that we can make from, I mean, it's, don't you think it's really true? It's like, it was put to me this way by my friend Charlie Hill, who's an amazing comedian. And
bless
he says to me, you know, there are people that get laughs, and then there are comedians. And he was saying comedians are people who, he said, the person gets laughs, who get up there and they'll have a joke about, they have an airline joke, they have an ex-wife joke, they have a mother-in-law joke, they have a car joke. And they get laughs, but when they leave the stage, you don't know anything about them. And he said, but then there are comedians, and they come from the pain. They spin all the adversity and the pain and whatever and embarrassing stuff and everything, spin it into laughter and comedy. And when they're up there, then when they leave the stage, you feel like you've known them your whole life. And, that's how it is. And I know that's true with you because the times I've seen you perform, I mean, it's all out there. And it's done in such a way that's so it's really refreshing and really comforting. I mean, it doesn't suck the energy out of the room at all. I mean, we're talking about some really, really funny stuff that everybody can relate to, but you know that you know, it cost you something to do those jokes. Because they're personal. And that's what's so beautiful about, you know, that's what's so beautiful about the comedy real estate. Like when a comedian, it's like, hey, it cost me to do this. No. I mean, I lived through this. I mean, the basis for this, and you can feel that because it kind of trades on the exchange in the comedy, in the exchange between the audience and the comic. You can feel it. You can feel the payload. You know, it's like, oh, that's it, and it rings true, and that's what I love. I mean, I love people that get laughs too. That's fine. Howie Mandel, fine, whatever. You know, but but I mean, I'd rather see Richard Pryor. And Howie Mandel. I mean, I'm not, you know, not mentioning names here for any particular reason. Well, yes, I am. I love Richard Pryor. But you know what I'm saying. It's like I love it when somebody, I just love it. And I love it when somebody makes me laugh anyway. And I don't care if it's coming from Carrot Top. I mean, I don't care. I mean, is that too old? Is it too Carrot Top was. Yeah.
How unusual he looks now.
Yeah.
He's had all of that facial surgery. He's now beginning to look like D.D. Khan from Life of My Life. I'm not sure what happened. I'm afraid of that now. You know, there'll be maybe one day when I'll go. No, it's a lot of plastic surgery. Looks like the goldfish from Pinocchio.
I know. I can't help. I'm not about that too, about getting work done. I don't know. I don't want to end up like I'm wearing a Halloween mask, although I know it for certain people that really works well, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether to just get old and just be old with wrinkles and just say, hey, this is who I am, or whether I need to. Well, right now it's no issue at all because I can't afford to do it anyway, so.
You know, I had the amazing opportunity to work with Joan Rivers.
Yeah. God, I love her.
When I interviewed to work with Joan, she's lovely and one of the hardest working women in show business.
Oh, I know I adore
Do you know that
her.
She's the number one jeweler in North America?
Yes, I did. I did know that because I've read
from all of her stuff on QVC.
I know,
honey,
and she's so resilient. She's so resilient.
Yeah.
Like after Edgar committed suicide, the way she resurrected her, she did her thing. Oh, she's bulletproof. I love her. And that movie, the recent movie with her, oh, honey, she's got some stones. I mean, they had the camera focusing in on her bare face with no makeup, everything. if any listeners here, if you haven't seen that movie, what was the title of that Joan Rivers movie? What was it called? Do you remember, Paul?
I'm trying to think.
I don't know. I didn't know we were going to be talking about Joan, but, well, you were a writer for her, so of course we are talking about her, but the focus is on
I was sitting in the interview with her.
Yeah.
And parts of her face move independently from other parts. It is the most fascinating thing. I was, she'd asked me a question, and I realized only one eyebrow was moving. I wasn't sure what was going on. And to get to work with her, as I said, she is the busiest woman in show business because we would shoot during the day and then put her in a limo so she could fly all night long to get to New York to do some QVC stuff and then come back. We would write, come back, and then shoot the show again. And, and I'm an old flight attendant. And that's a tough schedule for me. And I thought, and my dear, she's got a good, 40 years on me. Funny. You know, there's the craft of stand-up, which is different than acting. We don't tell stories. We do. It's gotten a little more lax, but it's a formula of setup, punch, setup, punch.
Yeah.
You know, take my wife, please.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she's that sort of old school comic. It's changed.
Right.
And I'm sure you've seen this, Marty. And people tell a little bit more of a story. I certainly
do.
Yeah. But
it's
what I think is engaging and I think is important.
I started out with setup punch, though. And then I've got
I think we all did.
And I still follow that. I still have to have several punch lines. You got to have, what is the rule? It's the 7-second rule, right?
A laugh every 7 seconds, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, stand-up for people who make it look easy, like George Carlin and like Joan Rivers and like Whoopi Goldberg and Richard Pryor, they make
everybody,
it look like they just strolled on stage and picked up the microphone and started talking.
Mm-hmm.
They
That's
don't understand
the
that we sit and write for hours on end and run stuff by each other. You know, a room full of comedians, no one laughs at each other. We'll look at each other, somebody will say something, and then we go, "That's funny."
That's funny. Yeah, nobody laughs at this. That's funny.
Yeah, you rarely laugh at each other's jokes unless you're in the audience, and then comedians are usually really good with other
supportive comedians.
But.
Yeah, and you're right, and a lot of what the illusion, the good comedy, when you get to where you're proficient, you make it look easy, and you appear to be just as if you're just thinking it up right at that moment and saying it right off the top of your head. But then behind the curtain, there's probably 10 years of honing it and working it and coming up with new concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a panning for gold. I mean, you put a whole bunch of grist into it. You put a whole bunch of,
sand
and crap you put in there, and then you sift it out to get the really funny, powerful stuff. But you work on that, and it's very intense. I think Drew Carey said one time that 5 minutes per year of good material that you could depend on, that works with all audiences, that it takes about 5 minutes a year to get that kind of thing. And I think now that it's a little, there's a different format where people are telling stories more, and it's a little bit different, then it's not quite that way, don't you think? And now we're talking about stand-up, but it is, and people don't, I think another thing about stand-up, one of the things that I really love, I'm so glad that I did stand-up for the time that I did. I put in about eight, nine years of professional stand-up comedy time, and I'm so grateful for that experience because it taught me so much about life. I mean, just the practice of doing stand-up, there are a lot of things you learn about life and how to meet challenges in life when you're in stand-up. Like, you learn how to meet the challenge and look forward to the challenge, right? And, I mean, you move toward the challenge. That's something I learned from stand-up, is you never back down. You always, always move forward. And even if you're scared, that creates an illusion of confidence. You know what I mean? Like, if you're moving forward or even lunging forward, you know, some comedians actually lunge forward on the punchline. But I mean, if there's a forward movement, but if you move backwards, you appear to be afraid. And I kind of thought, well, that's true in life. If we move toward a challenge rather than procrastinating or hanging back or being afraid, we're going to have a lot more momentum to hit it, you know? And I think that it's like an energy thing. It's one of those universal energy things. And the other thing I learned from it is just to be, and I remember one time I called you, I think I was down in Hollywood and I was going to go on to this set and I was really tired. I called you and I said, yeah, I'm going to go. And you said, oh, just come to the love. It's going to go great. And I thought, oh, hey, he says that too, because that's something I'd always said to myself, just come from the love. And I got up and I came from the love and I freaking crushed, you know. I just really crushed. And I had the energy come to me because the love was there. And it's so much like, you know, because in recovery, we have that. It's love and tolerance is our code. And anytime you come from love, you get this really extra burst of turbocharged power.
Well, and you know what I mean? I've become such a crunchy old thing. I can always tell. Well, and the other heartbreaking thing is, especially in our business, sometimes you don't get paid very well, and when you do get paid, it's in drinks.
Baby. Yes, right. I had a club I used to go to, and it was there were a couple clubs where they'd go. There was one in well, I won't mention it because somebody might still get busted for this, but there were two particular clubs in the southwestern part of the U.S., and I returned there a couple of times, believe me. But they offered us at the end of the week, they said, do you want to get paid in coke or money? You can take your and I'm probably
wow.
That's why I went back. Yeah, because it was pretty good. Not the money. I'm talking about the coke. But, you know, that was part of my downward spiral. It's like, oh, we can get paid in coke? Oh, I'm funny. Take just enough money to get gas money to the next town and the rest in coke.
Right.
And that was so that's what the rest of people are disaster, by the way. But, yeah, I mean, wasn't that part of the scene? Remember that? It was part
I
of
do
the
remember.
Scene.
I remember.
I got to another club one time where they had closed the club because the booker had been dealing, and he'd been putting all the money into his next buy, and then he got busted. And they the whole club had like the local MC do the clubs for like a month so they could save up enough money to have some more comedians come around.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, no names mentioned on that one either, but yeah. Yeah, go ahead. You were going to tell me your, yeah, you had another story. Go ahead, tell me your story.
When I first started, I've done my whole career as a stand-up comic sober.
Yeah.
But I would get to the club early and check in. And I would watch other comedians, and, you know, we're such an odd lot. They're running over their notes, and they're working. And then I would begin to watch them start drinking. And then especially somebody's going to go long, and you maybe have the 10-15 spot, but you really hit the stage at 11-15. And
yeah.
By that time, they're all messed up. And they might have been an amazing writer, but now they're just, you know, and sometimes that's funny, but I never want to be laughed at. I want you to laugh with me. So I didn't like the idea of it's such a risk. It's just you and a microphone, kids. You know, in our business, our option comes up with each joke. So I thought, I can't imagine doing this drinking. I would be so crazy because it's already so stressful. That to, you know, because I didn't get drinking right anyway. I you know, I got sober at 23. Mm-hmm. And I'm still, to this day, so grateful. I don't know what
good
it's like
you,
to be
honey.
Drunk at 30. I don't know what it's like to be drunk at 40. And I'm grateful because I didn't have five more minutes out there.
Yeah,
so,
right.
You know, it was for me.
Right, and stand-up will keep you sober because with me, I started out doing stand-up when I was drinking and using. And and I found very quickly, like I said, that kind of pay is a recipe for disaster. But I found out very quickly that, I mean very quickly when I was just doing open mics, I found out that you cannot drink or use when you're on stage. You have to go up there sober. I mean, it may work for other people, but for me, I had to be on the stage completely sober, because any kind of substance will insulate you from the truth. And you need to know what's really going, it's the white hot universal truth when you're out there, and you have to get the feedback from the audience. And if there's anything to insulate you or corrupt what they're, or you think you're funnier than you are or something like that, you are screwed. And I learned that the hard way. And then I think for me, one of the reasons that I am still alive is because I was doing stand-up nights, and that the fact that I couldn't use or drink all day that day until I got on stage was just, that kept me, I think it kept me alive. You know, because think about
it. Well, honey, you have amazing self-will, because that wouldn't have been my story had I been.
Yeah, but honey, to bomb was just the most horrible thing in the world. Just like to kill is the greatest feeling in the world. But, you know, I just got smacked down a couple times because I got up there high and I didn't have a concept of what was really going on. And I just didn't do well. So that was the thing. But it kept me sober. And then when my life did go off the rails, I quit doing stand-up and everything went to hell, as you know, but it was in the book. But anyway, then when I came back to stand-up, I came back sober to stand-up, and it was a whole different thing. But, I mean, it is, it's something like you said that you have to do, you have to be clear-eyed, and you have to, you're thinking on your feet all the time. So do you think, like, that's why I think in recovery, and I'm back to just talking about recovery, and by the way, we found out Joan Rivers' movie was called A Piece of Work. That's what it was called.
A Piece of Work, that's right. Thank you, Steve.
Yeah. Yes, thank you, Steve. To tie this into recovery for everyone listening, I think that's why in the rooms in recovery, some of the best laughs I've ever had were when I was listening to a speaker or I was listening to somebody share, because it's really the sense of humor that we have in recovery is so good because we are sober and we're taking life with our eyes open. You know what I mean? Don't you think that's true?
Well,
I mean, it's
well,
like the best.
I think the first time my recovery started to move forward was when I laughed. Because I was.
That's true.
I laughed, and it was a laugh of recognition. I remember listening to a speaker, and I had not laughed for a long time. You know, I was a young man. I thought I was losing my mind. I didn't know that drinking really was my problem. I was certainly self-medicating from being hideously depressed and confused and frightened and flipped out. And, you know, I'm the kind of garden variety drunk that I couldn't ever tell when I was going to get drunk. You know, I would either black out with one or I had an amazing capacity to, because, and to this day, I can't stand people who are sippers. I don't trust them. Let's drink. If you're going to drink, go after it. You know, I remember being to dinner with a gentleman who was a caterer, actually. And as we were finishing our conversation and we both got up to leave the table, I realized he had probably about a fourth cup wine still in his wine glass. And I sat back down. He said, "Are you all right?" I said, "Well, you haven't finished." And he said, "Oh, no, I've had enough." And I know I look like the RCA Victor logo, like Nipper, you know, with my head tilted to one side looking at him. And he said, "What's wrong?" I said, "I don't understand." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Did you just say you've had enough?" And he said, "Yeah, I don't care for anymore." I'm like, "What?
What?"
And he had the oddest look on his face. He said, "What are you saying?" I said, "Because that's not how my mind works at all. My mind thinks not only do you need to drink the rest of this glass of wine, they've opened a bottle and it's still somewhere in the kitchen, and look, they have an entire wall of wine, which I'm considering a good start." And he had the oddest look on his face. He goes, "No, I don't think that way at all." I said, "Ah, well, apparently you don't have a drinking problem." So
yeah.
It's still amazing to me. Right. I have to watch myself. I can't chew a stick of gum. There's 5 sticks in the pack. Let's go.
I know what you mean. That's so I know that there, anyone in recovery, so many of us, and I won't say anyone because I don't know everybody, but so many of us in recovery relate to that story. And so many of us in recovery from alcohol remember times where we actually walked around the table and drank what was left. I mean, come on. Or am I the only one? Am I the only one that did that? And then around and drank? Am I the only one?
Well, no, because here's the deal. I was a barfer. So I didn't get around to everybody else's drink because I usually had a couple, and I'm either in cleaning myself up or apologizing to somebody I've just lost my lunch on. Because it usually happened mid-sentence. This hideous projectile vomiting, like, you know, somebody would come over to say something to you, and I'd go, good afternoon. Whoa! Oh, it was just awful. I was horrible.
Well, that's good. Yeah, that's good because that's good. Because you
well, in fact, one embarrassing moment, this bartender had been serving me, and, you know, I remember him leaning forward in sort of a flirty kind of way, and I thought, oh, here's this is going to get good. He goes, I'm cutting you off. You're a mess.
Oh.
And I was so insulted and so embarrassed, and I'm sitting on this bar stool, and Marty, I couldn't get off the bar stool. Because it started to turn underneath me, so it's turning, and I'm trying to get off it, and then I start throwing up. So I'm sort of like this hideous spin art. I'm trying to get off this bar stool. I'm throwing up. It keeps rotating. Oh, it's awful. I never went back into that bar again.
The rotating. And then you'd get the room would be spinning. You wouldn't know whether your bar stool's rotating or the room is spinning.
Oh, and if I never, hilarious. You know, my life is rich anyway, but if bed spins, I used to have the worst bed spins. Oh.
Yeah. Oh,
horrific.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I remember a story you told me. I don't know if you want to share this, but the story about the getting arrested with the cheerleader thing.
I did.
Do you remember that?
Talk about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. It was this was Halloween of 1981, and a friend of mine and I lived in Long Beach at the time. And we just couldn't figure out what we were going to come to, West Hollywood, which it's turned into such a huge festival. It's like Mardi Gras now. But this is back in 81, before it got as large as it is now. And we decided we would go as Palos Verdes High School cheerleaders. His sister got another uniform. She'd been a cheerleader. And I fit in her uniform, and my friend fit in the other one. And we come up to West Hollywood. And we're standing in line to get into a bar. And somebody grabbed me by the back of my neck, slammed my face into the brick wall, and pulled both of my arms behind me and handcuffed me. And as I turned around, I said, well, he's going, you're drunk in public. But I wasn't yet. Of all the nights in the world, hadn't gotten into the bar. I was stone cold sober. And they were just arresting all of the people standing in line to get into this bar. And I looked down the street, and on Santa Monica Boulevard, which is sort of the main drag through West Hollywood, traffic was stopped because people were running up and down in costume. I mean, it was bizarre. There was a guy running on top of the RTD bus and pouring champagne on the crowd. I mean, it was out of control. So they arrest me, and they book me. So here I am standing in a little black and white plaid skirt. And they took my two lovebirds on a stick barrette. They made me take my saddle shoes off. And I had to spend 8 hours in a drunk tank, you know, dressed
in
this.
I love that you had the saddle shoes.
And, you know, there's all these people laying. It's like a giant racquetball court, you know, with a drain in the middle. And my friend, who's now ticked at me, is trying to separate himself from me like he doesn't know me. I'm like, dude, we're wearing the same uniform. They know we're together.
I love that. He was like rocking hard with pom-poms. He was going to go butch on.
Yeah, I'm like, you're not that tough, dude. You can't pretend it's a kill. I'm sorry.
I love that. Oh, I love that story. Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's...
Well, and then the following year, okay, so the following year, now I'm like, oh, I don't know, 30 days sober, and I'm walking down a hallway at work, and this guy stops and goes, that's a great picture of you in Touch magazine, which was a gay men's magazine. And I said, I beg your pardon?
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, there's a great picture of you. I said, I don't know what you're talking about. He goes,
Well, it looks like you're
a cheerleader. And I could feel my blood turn cold. I'm like,
I didn't know.
So there
that.
Was a photographer in the crowd that took pictures of me being arrested.
Oh, honey, how embarrassing.
So I didn't know anything else to do except buy a bunch of them and have a book signing at a bar.
Good idea, yeah. Just buy them up and sign them and sell them
exactly.
Back.
Once again, humor is vital. How can we turn this around?
Yeah, stand memorabilia. And actually, yes, those kind of things are embarrassing. But then, I don't know, do you still have a copy of the paper? I mean,
do you
have a scrapbook?
Oh, you're sure? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I look back at that, and I remember putting on that uniform going, I'm a little fat. Oh, I want to yell back through time to myself going, oh, hold on, dude, you look great now. Wait till you turn 50 and the tissue breaks.
That's
it's all around your ankle.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, you can look back and go, oh, my gosh, I was so young. Yes, I was in a drunk tank, but my saddles were gone, but I was so young. I know, it's like, it makes me want to thumb through some of my old mug shots. I'm going to have to go on the Freedom of Information Act. I was just thinking about the other day. I thought, you know what? Some of my mugshots that I thought looked so bad, I'll bet you if I go back now, I'll be thinking, this is looking pretty good. This is pretty sweet.
Well, you know, I'm so grateful that we've gotten through the holidays because
it's
difficult for people in recovery because it gets a little scary around the edges. And, and you know, I still people that stay sober, at least in my experience, they do the work. And, you know, I can't ski on last year's snow, meaning I don't care how much time you've got. It has to be one day at a time. It has to be because, you know, I can't rely on my sobriety of 1989 to get me through today.
Right.
No. It's, you know, recovery is in seconds and inches.
Right, it is. It's moment by moment.
And that's
what's so good about it. You know, this year my New Year's resolution, and I'm going to listen to your show tomorrow because that's your topic on your show.
It is.
Have you messed up your resolutions yet? Right? Isn't that the topic?
Well, how many people here 7 days into it are they still working out? Are they still?
Oh, so many of us. But you know, one of my resolutions for this year is to increase my present moment awareness. And I feel like that's something that I can do moment to moment, you know what I mean, and get my present moment consciousness built up. It's something that I want to do. Last year, I made a resolution to do something to change, to use CBT and meditation to help me with chronic pain, because I've had some chronic pain issues. And I'm telling you, I made so much progress on that. And it's progress, not perfection. So I feel like I always design a resolution like that, that's something kind of emotional, mental health, spiritual kind of thing, where I can just be, back to the drawing board. You know, where I know I can't maintain that. But it's okay because it's a process, you know. I'm not going to say anything like I'm not going to eat sugar all year or something like that. I'm not going to say something like that. Or I'm going to do this.
Well,
and
you know,
this.
Even now I'm still a man of extremes. Do you know? And I cook that way. Can I tell you how many pots I've burned? It's either a full rolling boil or it's off. I didn't know that there was simmer.
I
don't know that I have a resolution, but I had dinner this week with a friend of mine that I have not seen in 7 years, and we saw each other at a meeting, and we both like ran across the room. I love when that happens. I love that my higher power works in upside down and backwards, you know, and always supplies exactly what I need. Even if I'm aware I don't need it.
I love that. Upside down and backwards.
Yeah.
So cool.
You know, God doesn't take a room at the Ritz. He doesn't need to.
That's true.
And so we were sitting there. So we went to dinner. And I noticed she has a beautiful watch on and we're chatting. And I glanced at my watch and realized we needed to get moving, to get going. And as we stood up, I said, what time do I have? and she showed me her watch. And it does not have a watch face on it. It just has the word now.
Oh, cool.
I went, that is the coolest thing. The time is now. She said it because she was finding that she was getting so crazy about watching a clock or watching the time mm-hmm. that she was not even able to listen to people because she was racing off in her mind somewhere else. So she bought mm-hmm. this little watch as the only time there is now. And my first sponsor used to say that to me because I love catastrophic thinking. I you know, still to this day, I get a little buzz about what impending doom could happen, you know, in August of this year. Mm-hmm. Well, honey, no one says you're getting to August. There's no guarantee for dinner tomorrow night.
Right,
so,
that's true.
So bringing it into the now, suddenly just being here with you, this is all we're doing. Now is the only time there is. And suddenly that's where the real safety is. Because now this is all the time there is. So this is all we're doing.
This is it. It's 100%. And that's the most power comes from that present moment. I mean, that's where we really have the power of now. We have the power of the choice. I mean, we can call the shot. It's like this.
Well,
let
me ask you a question.
Yeah. This is the deck of the Starship
Enterprise. But in dealing with fear, because the name of your book, which is Never Give In to Fear.
Yeah.
Which I love the title, because I have found, especially since I read your book, how seductive fear is.
Mm-hmm. It is.
You know, once you start into scaring yourself, it's really, you know, I do. There's sort of an adrenaline buzz that I kind of get off on. I think it's part of my addictive personality. You know, it's going to get really bad. Oh, this is going to be really horrible. and then of course I tell the story over and over to myself, so I thoroughly scare myself to death. My sponsor used to say to me, "The hands around your throat are your own. Stop doing that; you're hurting yourself."
Oh, I've done it. I mean, I know. There's those scary stories that you tell yourself. Several years ago, I decided I was going to start telling only good stories, you know, and mm-hmm. not tell the bad ones anymore. And I mean, I still have the screams of the bad titles. I've still got my inner alcoholic addict, you know, is pitching those screenplays to me.
Yeah, I get it.
Your car needs washing, you're going broke, you know, whatever. But just a little dumb stuff. But I can reject it now because I know that that what I have now, as long as I'm in this present moment, I have the safety of the present moment I have today, and I can always go back to that and say, okay, today my needs are met. Today I'm with my higher power, and there's power greater than myself, and it's a game changer, really. It is, and I don't have to get wrapped up in fast forwarding to all this terror of the unknown future. Or dropping back to regrets of the past and dwelling on those. And, of course, you know, our minds are like machines, and so they crank forward and they crank back. But I think that's what the present moment is so powerful. You know,
well, because I still think occasionally that my past is full of opportunity and today is a desert.
Mm-hmm.
And I have that backwards.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like looking back and saying, oh, I should have done this. I should have done that. Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Just the past opportunities. Oh, wow. I really, yeah, right. Yeah. I think those shoulds are real bad. They say you can should yourself to death. And I forget who says that. But somebody, not me, but I was just repeating it. But I think it's... maybe I said you can should yourself, but it's the shoulds and the musts that get you. And the guy that said that is a guy named David Burns. He's a psychologist, and he worked with Beck, who's another famous psychologist. But Burns is one that teaches you, you know, how to retrain your thoughts. And I like that where he said, don't fall into the musts and the shoulds. Because, you know, if you feel like you've got to do, you know, it's like, I've got to do this. It brings that urgency and that terror on. You know, it's like, I've got to pay these bills. And, it should be like this. They should have done that. When I called looking for that job, they should have hired me. You know, all those should have.
Mm-hmm.
And they go two ways, I found out. You know, when they talk about shoulda, woulda, coulda in the program, and I just think that just meant me thinking I shoulda, I woulda, I coulda. Oh, no. I can turn it around where everybody else shoulda with my expectations. And that's toxic, you know? The shoulda, woulda, coulda of the whole world. They should have just... I should have been rich by now, you know, whatever. It's so unrealistic. And there's a real safety in having a, you know, like realistic expectations, right? I mean, if...
Well, you know, and I, once again, I love that my higher power sometimes illustrates in such a calm and comforting way. I was at a dinner party in Beverly Hills, and we were talking about aging. And
that must have been interesting at a dinner party in Beverly Hills. Did anybody want to admit to the fact that they were?
Well, no, there was a lovely lady that I would have thought was possibly certainly older than myself, maybe in her early 70s, beautifully turned out. She looked wonderful. So did her husband, a very handsome gentleman, and we were seated there. And I mentioned, you know, being in show business, I don't, you know, with the economic downturn, even the 401k that I had to cash it. And, you know, basically live while we're all waiting for this because we the writer's strike and all of that. And I said, I did it as a joke. I said, you know, I guess I just didn't really plan well. And she had this funny look on her face. She said, we did. We planned very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at her and I said, oh? And other people were talking, so it was one of these nice private moments just between the two of us. She said, well, you know, our son is a stockbroker. And she said, we lived here on Elevado, which is a street in Beverly Hills. She said, and to show, you know, that we were really with him, we decided to turn our portfolio over to our son because he was working and doing very well. And the first couple of months, we saw an amazing return. We were pretty happy about it. But unfortunately, he was working with Bernie Madoff.
Oh.
And I looked at her. She said, we now live in a single apartment together.
Oh.
And so she took my hand. She said, we did plan well, but sometimes things happen. And Marty, the chill that ran down my back, I was so grateful that I was, first of all, clean and sober, but second of all, that my higher power is going to take care of it no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could have planned well. And then, and no one did anything wrong. I mean, she was, you know, doing it to support her son and on and on.
Absolutely.
But things happen. Things happen. And
that's
true. I had all my respect. Oh, my goodness. I thought so, and so sweet. I would like to have seen them again.
Right.
It was
and
one of the
so much,
great
you know,
people.
I know what you mean. Life is full of unexpected surprises. I mean, that's it. That is a beautiful story. Thank you for sharing that. You know, what I want to do now is ask you a few things about what's going on with you. I'd like to ask anybody that's listening to this and wants to listen to your show, The Old Mary Show, which is a fantastic show, and I'm a huge fan and a frequent listener. Can you tell our listeners how they can listen to The Old Mary Show on LA Talk Radio?
Well, I sure can, and Mary Marty has been a guest. You can listen to her show in our archives. I get to work with the amazing Mary Kennedy. She's a headlining comic. She is the hostess with the mostess of The Old Mary Show, and I'm her co-host. And you can find us at latalkradio.com on Channel 2. We go live on Tuesday nights from 7 to 8 p.m., and tomorrow night we're talking about New Year's resolutions. How you doing with them? But we've had amazing, you can go back, we've had ghost hunters, we've had mediums on, we've talked about anti-bullying, we've talked about 9/11, what do you think happened?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of things, and both Mary and I are very recovery friendly. We talk a lot about recovery and about the renewal of the planet. So.
Well, I know it. It's a cool show. I highly, highly recommend it. Okay, can you tell me... how people can get in touch with you or find out more about you? Where can they go to do that?
Well, you know, the easiest way to get a hold of me, and isn't everyone on Facebook? You can find me at Paul Jacek on Facebook. It's the easiest way to find me.
Perfect. And that's, okay, that's great. Now, have you got anything else to tell me about what's going on in your life? Do you want to share any upcoming things with me or?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things. You know, we're just getting ready to go into pilot season. Something else that I'm very, very proud of is I have started teaching. I think I talked a little bit about these two classes that we're getting ready to teach, acting for stand-up comics and stand-up comedy for actors. We're doing that up at the John Lovitz Club here at Universal Studios, and that will start in a couple weeks. And you can find that more about that on, you can ask me on Paul Jasek on Facebook. So there's a lot of wonderful things that just are, because we're getting ready for pilot season. So Mary and I teach for Youth Acting Biz, and you can find that at youthactingbiz.com. And I teach our Legal 18 class, meaning kids that look much younger, that they can work a little bit longer due to work rules. That's why it's called Legal 18. And we're still accepting enrollments for it. And we have a showcase session where we introduce our kids to industry professionals, managers, and casting directors and agents. And out of the 9 kids I had last session, 8 of them got representation. And Mary and I won an award. Youth Acting Biz was voted best in North Hollywood for special instruction. So we're pretty proud of that.
That's right. I knew you had that award, and I forgot to mention that up top, but I'm glad you're mentioning it here at the end of the show, because like I said, you're so freaking amazing. I could have spent an hour talking about all the stuff you've done.
You sweet thing.
And to have that kind of a track record with your students, how many of them got representation?
Most of I would say well over 90% of our students, once they stay
90%.
With us, will get, we'll get representation.
That's what I was saying. It sounded like 90%. That's fantastic, because it's hard to get representation.
So, I'm pretty proud of them.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it is. I'm pretty proud of them.
Well, I'm thinking I thought we might have a couple of live callers, but I don't think we do, and we've got a few more minutes left. Is there anything you want to talk about, tell our listeners, anything you're plugging? You got shows or
is there anything you want
people to know?
You know, here's what I also enjoy. Not only do I enjoy entertaining folks, but I do a fair amount of hospital and institution work when time allows. So if you happen to be listening to us and you are contemplating recovery or you're at a place in recovery, and what the love that Marty and I share, if this sounds attractive to you, do it. Go ahead. You know, come join us. Because I knew I tested the waters a lot around recovery before I got into it. It really is the easier, softer way. So I always encourage people. And, you know, a couple of people that I'd worked with in early recovery have contacted me again on Facebook. So if there's something I can personally do for any of the listeners out there that they're confused or they're wondering or they just need to kind of reach out and have a message me at Paul Jasek on Facebook, and let's have a couple of instant message conversations, because it's just one person helping another. But along with that, then come join us. Mary and I are going to be possibly touring this summer. We don't have our
schedule
yet.
That's right. Hi, Paul.
So,
hey.
Hello.
Hi,
Mary.
That's
my darling.
Paul Jasek. We will be touring together. How are you?
Well, I'm so glad you called
in.
Welcome
on the show. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I just for a second. It's not about me at all. So
it is.
Oh, please. No, I'm just wishing you.
No, I work with a woman. Yes, it is.
And you've got an award together, and you have the most kick-ass show.
And people think we're married, so, you know, it's good.
Oh, well, they don't know anything, man. And also, Mary's going to be my guest in March, first week in March, right?
That's right.
Oh, the second week in March, you're going to be my fab guest then. So cool.
There you
I'm
go.
So glad you came on. Yeah, Paul's a wonderful guest, isn't he?
Yeah, no, I mean, I got to tell you guys, it's a great show, and you know, I couldn't get to my therapist today, so I learned a lot, and I feel better, so bill me, because it was really good. Thank you, guys. Paul, I'll be very well adjusted tomorrow for our show. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, I can hardly wait.
All right, my dear. So I'm going to go. You guys end the show, but it's so great. Marty, I'm so happy for you, and Paul, I'll see you later.
All right.
I love you guys.
Okay.
Bye.
I know.
This is Steve. I have to tell you, this call pops up, and I click it on. I'm going to screen it, and it says, she says, "Hi, this is Mary." I'm like, "Oh, I'm not screening you. You're going live. You'll probably have to interrupt because they're just chatting away."
Oh, that's good because I didn't see. Well, I'm new at this, and I'm new to radio. Yeah. Hello.
Well, I'm so surprised that she was listening. Good girl.
Oh, no, I thought I recognized that phone number. Anyway, yeah. But, yeah, Paul, thank you so much for being our illustrious guest tonight and for sharing so many things that were both funny and insightful.
Well, it's been my good pleasure, and congratulations, Marty. And, Steve, it was a pleasure to meet you, and I look forward to listening, certainly always, and we'll see you soon, Marty. Aren't you coming down south?
Yeah, I'll be down there. Well, I'm up in San Francisco now, so yeah, I'm gonna be down probably after the 23rd. And,
perfect.
I might, with me. I might be down there for my birthday. My birthday is the 30th. I might come down there.
All right.
Yeah. So
I'll give my love to your cute husband, and I've had such a grand time.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. He's out at a football party. He's watching football.
Hey, before you go, Paul, I just wanted to say thank you so much. But also, if anything else comes up in the future, I'm sure Marty won't mind. Please come back on. It's been great. I've been sitting here on mute but laughing my ass off. So it's been a lot of fun.
Well, thank you so much.
You've got to come back on.
I would be more than happy to. It would be my good pleasure.
Fantastic. Looking forward to it, my friend.
All right. Take good care.
Take good care. Good night. Well, Steve? Oh, I guess my show is over.
Sorry. I have a tendency to put myself on mute. So, yeah, you got about 30 seconds if you want to wrap it up. Otherwise, we'll take it out.
I think we should take it out. I mean, I'm really, I guess, wraps it up is that recovery is kick-ass personal transformation. We're all going through things that change is good and new beginnings are good. Daily renewal is always there with us, and we've always got hope, and we've always got laughs, and we've got it all as long as we're connected. And we're connected on this show, so I invite everybody to come back to the next episode. Next week is Karen Rontowski. She's a fabulous comedian of David Letterman's show. David Letterman got up out of his chair and walked up there and shook her hand, which he hardly ever does. You got to really rock it to get that kind of a reaction out of David Letterman. And she's also been on Comedy Central. She's absolutely fantastic. See you then.
Hello, friends. This is Steve Thompson, executive producer at Pure Motive Radio. We hope you've enjoyed the Kick-Ass Personal Transformation Show with Marty McGibbon. And tune in next week, Monday at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where Marty will have more of this entertaining, inspirational, motivational program broadcast to you. Kick-Ass Personal Transformation is brought to you by the Pure Motive Radio Network. Hey, check out our website. Simply go to www.puremotiveinc.com. Again, that's puremotiveinc.com. We're also on Facebook. Simply look for Pure Motive Radio and like us because we like you. If you've enjoyed this show, you'll probably like all of the other shows we have. Tune in on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the One Upper Show, where callers call in with their best stories to one-up each other. Then on Wednesdays, we have the Serenity Sisters Show. They cover all the issues women face in sobriety.